Hey, what's going on, you filthy animals? Welcome back to another episode of the Wall Street Junkie Podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Luke Muller. This week's episode I had on Colbert. The podcast has been kind of a little bit slower recently. Been working on a lot of other things. The big announcements I have a newsletter. Make sure you're following me on Instagram. You can get the link to that newsletter. Comes out weekly. The other big thing, I got hooked up at an advisory firm. I now work at SCP Stewart Capital Advisors as an investment advisor. We're a fee-based fiduciary. We have a asset management fee. 1% scales up to 1.5%. So if you guys are interested in that, let me know. But also, if you like consulting on the side, you don't need an advisor to manage your entire portfolio, but you do want help. You do want advice to look at a few things. I can be put on retainer and paid as an hourly consultant. Reach out to me if you are interested in that. I'm always here for you guys. But without further ado, let's jump into this conversation with Colbert. She's a great resource when it comes to personal finance, when it comes to getting started. She's a money coach on Instagram, TikTok. She's really well known for her dancing videos while sprinkling in those hidden personal finance gems. So without further ado, I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. Okay, well, welcome. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, of course.
For my guys in the chat, you guys should know her. If not, go follow her. She's a, you know, a money coach, finance coach, and she's known for her dance moves. And I gotta say, you've inspired me, and I am a terrible dancer. You put me in my place, but I love it.
You can't be worse than me. I mean, seriously, I've had people comment on my videos sometimes and they're like, this can't really be how you dance. And I'm like, it 100% is. Like, just like if you see me at a wedding, like that is how I am dancing.
Why dancing? I mean, I love it. What got you inspired to just do that? I love it.
It was like, it was such a random thing. I had been on TikTok for a while and I was I don't know how, like, all these people do these dances. It's so impressive. I don't know how they do it. And I was like, I'm just going to, like, be myself and, like, dance anyway and just embrace the fact that I'm really bad at it. Because I'm like, I don't see that many other people doing it, but I do see a lot of people just being like, yeah, we're just going to vibe. And I was like, well, this is my vibe. And my vibe is, like, really bad dancing. And so I just started doing it. And people really liked it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it.
Someone's asking for a dance off. We might get to that a little bit later. But do you find that people love authenticity? Is that why you do it? Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's definitely a big part of it. I mean, me being a goofball is like totally, like, that's just who I am. Like, that's not fake. And I think it is, I think a lot of what I've heard is people really like the fact that I'm not afraid to look stupid. And it's like, I'm talking about really important things and I'm talking about finance and like people think finance is boring. People think personal finance is boring. So it's like, if I add that entertainment value to it, it's like, well, maybe you're watching for the dance moves or the ridiculousness of it all. And you're also learning something at the same time. My friend, Mr. Money Jar, he was like, there's just this weird thing that happens when I watch your videos. He's like, I'm like laughing at the dance moves, but you're saying stuff that's really important. And he's like, and it just, I don't know, it works.
I love that. Yeah, I think, like you said, personal finance can be boring. So you got to get a message that speaks to people from an entertainment and a value add perspective.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, I mean, if you ever want to dance, I mean, if you're coming to FinCon, I'm trying to get everybody to start dancing with me in these FinCon videos.
So are you going live in FinCon? Like, are you going there in person? Where is it?
It's in Austin this year.
One second. My mom's calling me. I'm going to decline. So it's in Austin. Okay. That was an old stomping grounds of mine. Have you been there before?
No, I haven't. So I'm actually going to be there for, I'm going to go from Tuesday to Monday so that I can actually get to see it.
Okay. And is that, when is that again? That's in January?
No, it's in September.
Oh, damn. And are you, and you got invited to speak?
Did I get that? Yep, I'm speaking at it. Yes.
What are you talking about? Can you give us a little bit of hints or?
Yeah, so I'm on a panel where we're going to be discussing the importance of empathy and money. So like when you're teaching your clients about how to money, when you're creating content for your audience, the importance of not just like plowing through and ignoring like the whole person, instead thinking about the person as a whole and their experiences with money and using empathy to really reach them in a deeper way.
Wow. How did you get into this? What was your background? And then, you know, where was the light bulb switch where now you're dancing and making content? Where did that happen?
Yeah. So, I mean, I have been a blogger for a really long time. I started Clobear back in 2017. And at that time, I was actually talking about mental health and relationships and personal growth, nothing to do with finances.
Right.
And it kind of started at the time where I was like, okay, I need to go to therapy. I need to like get my mind right. And as I was able to start getting my mind right, I really couldn't ignore the fact that I was still really bad with personal finance. And I was like, personal finance it causes a lot of stress and anxiety in our lives and even depression, because especially with student loans, it's like you feel trapped. You feel like you can't do anything. You feel like you've made all these horrible decisions and this is all your fault and like you're not going to be able to get out of it. And so I couldn't ignore that anymore. And I decided, okay, I'm just going to do this in the same way that I've done Clobear, is I'm just going to like figure it out as I go. And I'm going to write about it as I go. And so what I started doing is I would literally share on the internet, and it's still up there, everything that I spent my money on, whether savings, investments, debt payoff, literally everything, every single month. Yeah. And I still do it. So it kind of like helped me stay accountable. And like, if you come to my page, you know that I'm transparent. That's like my whole shtick. Yeah. Is like, I like being transparent, the good stuff and the bad stuff. And so kind of sharing that, being held accountable by the people who are reading it. And also just knowing like, at the end of the month, I'm going to have to write about this. I'm going to have to share what I spent my money on, whether it was stupid or not. And I want to keep learning and I want to keep like providing value. So that just kind of like slowly transformed. And I don't know about you, but like, I feel like anytime anybody gets involved in personal finance, it's like this like avalanche of like, you just get in the door by like managing your money and like trying to, I started out like wanting to be debt free. That was like the big thing. And then I was like, it's not really just about being debt free. It's like, I want to build wealth. I want to be able to retire early. I want to do all this stuff that I hear about the people in the FIRE community doing.
Yeah.
And so it just kind of like, it stacked on top of each other until it's like this obsession of mine. And I was like, well, I think I don't really want to write about mental health or relationships anymore. I really want to write about personal finance, because this to me has been the most empowering thing that of anything I've ever done. And I've done a lot of shit, but this was like, I've never felt more in control of my life. I've never felt more like I can do whatever I want. I've never, you know, all of those good things. So that's kind of where it inspired me to go all in on it.
You know, you touched on accountability, and you know, you're out there in the limelight. What would you give to somebody who doesn't feel like they can do what you've done as far as being accountable on a blog? What are some other ways you can be accountable? Because I think it's huge. Oh, I lost you. Hold up 1 second. I think I lost you on Zoom. Let's see.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So your questions, is the echo still there? I keep seeing the comments that there's a really bad echo.
Oh, is there? Let me see. Yeah, there is. Give me 1 sec. Let's see here. Do you have a headset? Because I think that
I have AirPods, but it can't connect to both. Should it be connected to just like my Zoom?
Mm-hmm. Yep, okay, you could do that.
Hang on 1 second.
Sorry about that, guys. We will get that working out. I am sorry about that. The reason why there's an echo, guys, is we're running Zoom and live. But mainly for my podcast, I want to get this gem of a conversation on as many platforms as I can. Okay, I think.
Okay, let's see. Is the echo gone? Oh, sweet. Thank you, Fluent in Flat Finance, as always.
Yeah.
Okay, so your question was, what was your question?
No worries. I just want to confirm. No more echo, guys. Can someone drop down just instead of Andrew. I don't trust Andrew all the time. Sometimes he's trolling a little bit, so I can't.
Yeah. Okay, I'll speak. Is it echoing?
Don't think so.
Okay.
No echo.
Woohoo!
So when it comes to personal finance, I totally agree that the accountability piece is huge. But for somebody who doesn't have the confidence, because let's face it, you have tremendous confidence, which I applaud you for. What can people do to be accountable?
Yeah, that's not like dancing on the internet, right, or writing about it on a blog. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it just depends on your community and what resources you have available. There are so many different ways to get connected to people anymore, whether it's talking to people on the internet through Instagram or Reddit or following a forum or something like that. Maybe it's, getting involved in a Facebook group that's focusing on personal finance and saying like, okay, these are my goals. There's tons of accountability groups online that you can definitely get involved in. But if you also have somebody in your community who's interested in personal finance and you want to, it's the same thing with like any other goal, when you have a goal, you got to like find an accountability buddy, or you've got to find that accountability within yourself. And the way to do it within yourself is really focusing on, okay, putting together a plan and like continually checking in with yourself and being really honest with yourself, whether that's just using something like a planner or a diary or a journal where you're like, okay, this was my goals for the month. At the end of the month, I'm going to do like a reconciliation of my goals. How am I doing? What am I on track? Am I, succeeding? Am I heading in the right direction?
I love that, and that's such a huge piece, because I like the Reddit, Facebook kind of, I didn't even think about it in that way. Kind of to go back to your experience, what was your professional experience, if you don't mind talking about it, or as much as you feel comfortable? I'm kind of curious what that journey was like.
Yeah, my professional experience is all over the place. So when I studied in college, I was studying English and Spanish. So I got 2 degrees, one in English, one in Spanish. And the whole goal that I had was I wanted to teach English abroad in Spain specifically. But at the time that I graduated, it was 2012. And so there were no jobs, especially in Spain. At the time, I think it was like a 50% unemployment rate for people in their 20s. It was insane. So like in order to go teach English in Spain, I would have had to pay this huge fee, and then I'd only get a stipend. It was like 700 euro a month, which is like not enough to pay my student loans. So I ended up working at an ATM company for a year, which I hated. It was worse. It was soul suckingly bad.
An ATM company?
So I know all about ATMs and it's like such a weird job. And because I was the only person there who could speak Spanish, I'd often get calls from like their customer service where they'd call and there are these people who are going down to Mexico who are like in Texas, getting ready to cross the border, trying to take their last $400 out, and the ATM wouldn't give it to them. It was like a default. And so they'd call me in this panic and I had to tell them like, it could take 30 days to get your money. And they're like, I need this right now. And it's like, there's nothing I can do. So it was horrible. Like it was soul suckingly bad. So anyway, I eventually got the courage to just say, screw it, and pursue my dream of teaching English abroad. But instead of doing it in Spain, I ended up doing it in China. Whoa. Because China was like throwing money at English teachers from the US. It was like, come teach abroad, come teach English. We need it. Come, we'll pay for your apartment. We'll pay for your plane ride. We'll give you a good salary. And I was like, well, why not?
Yeah, I like that.
I'd love to learn Mandarin. Let's try it. Like, let's do it. And so I actually taught English in China, in actually Wuhan, China, before coronavirus. It was not famous before coronavirus. Nobody knew where Wuhan was.
Wow.
So I taught there for a couple of years. And I moved all around China because the second year that I was there, I was in another position where I got to go open schools in these tiny counties and things like that. So anyway, from there, when I moved home, I really didn't know what my skill set was. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And so I fell into fundraising, working at a nonprofit. And I really excelled in that because I had a really great boss who believed in me and, saw potential in me. So he just always gave me these things that I never felt ready for. And I'd do really well. And then I'd, eventually get a promotion after promotion. And I ended up getting about 4 promotions in 3 years. Which took my salary from like 42,000 to like 70,000 in that short time.
To the moon. And then, I love it.
Yeah, and then I transferred completely out of fundraising and completely out of, I was at a medical nonprofit, into where I'm at now, which is consulting, communications, and engineering. So I am all over the board when it comes to my career.
Is this full-time what you're doing now, or no, just part-time for now?
My financial coaching?
Financial coaching, yeah.
No, so right now it's just part-time, although it's full-time hours. I am probably doing it at least 40 hours a week, but I do have a full-time job too, right now.
Wow. I do this as full-time as I can, and wow, I applaud you for that. I don't know if I could do it, because it just takes over like every thought of your brain.
It does. It's definitely my passion. But I have enough flexibility with my day job right now that it's been okay. But I recently was promoted. And so now it's kind of like it's taking more of my time. So I'm very much on the spectrum of I want to quit my job to pursue this full time. And I'm preparing a year emergency fund to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's great. I like that. You know,
it's so cool that you do this full time though. I'm very jealous.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I kind of did the same thing. The emergency fund, you know, I got everything together and, in November, I decided to quit corporate America and do my own
thing. Love it. Yeah.
But you know, I'm kind of curious. I was reading on your backstory. You started investing what, like 2 years ago? Is that really when you started to, you know, were you late to the game, do you feel like? And
oh yeah, I mean, late to the game is so subjective. Like, so subjective. You know, I wish I had started when I was 18, but I didn't really start investing. So when I took the job that I'm currently, or the company that I'm currently at, it was 2019, and I was just getting like the minimum match on my 401k at the time. So I think I had $10,000 after, you know, investing for 3 years. And yeah. When I moved to Omega, I kept just getting my minimum match, and I was really, really focused on being debt free. So even after starting this like personal finance journey at the end of 2019, I didn't really start heavily investing until the following year. And so it's been a little over 2 years now that I've been investing, because it took me a whole year to realize, okay, I don't want to just put 10% in my 401k anymore. And I want to learn how to manage my account. And I also want to start like maxing it out. Like I hear about these people maxing out their accounts, and I want to do that because I hear taxes are really expensive. And so I was kind of just like, it was one step at a time. It was like my first year was all about paying off debt, and I paid off $20,000 of debt. And then I was still investing my 401k, but then the second year was like, okay, I want to pay off my debt still, but I also want to invest a little bit more. And then as I learned how to invest, it was like, all right, I don't really care about my debt anymore. I'm just going to like invest a crap ton.
So now, you know, were you now investing well above the 401k? And so now you got taxable brokerage accounts too.
Sorry, they said the echo's back. So I'm checking in my sound. Let me see. Oh, it disconnected. Hang on. My AirPods disconnected.
Oh, no worries.
There we go. All right. Can you hear me now?
I can.
Is there an echo?
I am good to go. I'm getting this.
Okay,
this
perfect.
So talk to me about, you know, you realize you want to do above and beyond the 401k.
Yeah.
How did you start that? Where did you look to? Where did you open brokerage accounts? How was that process? Because I always get that question.
So, one of the first things I started doing, which is something that I've talked about on my page, is I made a bad investment decision. I decided to invest a big chunk of money in a private money lending situation where I was funding essentially a contractor to flip projects in Chicago.
Yeah.
And so it was going great for, you know, I did that. That was probably one of the first things I did outside of my 401k, and it was going great for a while. But now fast forward to 2021, it's looking like there's a possibility I could lose up to $60,000 on the investment that I made 2 years ago. And so it was one of those, you shouldn't invest things that you don't fully understand, but I didn't really get that at the time. And it's turned into, you know, one of those expensive lessons where you're like, man, I'm glad I made that mistake when I was in my early 30s rather than it being my life savings at, you know, 60 years old. But we'll see. Fingers are still crossed that the money will still come through, but we'll see what happens. Essentially, just with COVID and everything and the cost of lumber going up, he's faced some hardships, so he hasn't been able to pay out his investors as quickly as he's wanted. So we'll see what happens there. So that was one of my first experiences, and that's why I really like to talk to people about, like, you need to know what you're investing in, and you also have to understand that when you're investing in something that's really risky, like private money lending, you have to understand that you could lose that money. And if you're okay with that, proceed, but don't invest money that you're not willing to lose. So that was long before I knew anything about investing. And so I was like, oh, this is great. Like, I'm making 20% returns all the time. Like, I'm just going to keep funneling my money.
Is that what you were getting on the private money, 20%? Oh my God, that's really good.
Well, it was until now. It's like, well, I might lose all of it.
What kind of project was he working on? 20%, that's stellar. What was he doing?
He does real estate flipping in Chicago. So it was like big multi-units, whole buildings that he was flipping. So he had several different investors, but now it's like, yeah, those returns were good, but now we're looking at, was it too good to be true? It might have been too good to be true. Because I remember thinking, I was like, man, this is too good to be true. And now, sure enough, we'll see what actually happens. But hi, Cece. So yeah, that was my first thing that I did outside of my 401k. And now it's like, okay, this is a very, very big learning lesson. I am still definitely hoping that I make some of that money back. And it's still, he has not said that he's filing bankruptcy yet, knock on wood.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But like I said, I just try to be transparent about that because, you know, stuff like that happens. And like, if you're not smart about it, you could lose a lot of money. And so after that, I really focused on putting the full $19,500 into my 401k. And then maxing out a Roth or a, well, I don't qualify for a Roth, but I do the IRA and then roll it over into a Roth IRA.
Sneaky devil. I love it.
Yes. Well, I'm planning on not rolling it over until I quit my job, because then I'll be in a much lower tax bracket. Unless, of course, you know, who knows what Clover's going to make in the first year or whatever, but I'm assuming it'll probably be less. Yeah. I'm assuming it'll be less than what I'm making now. So, yeah. And then I have not yet invested outside of that because I'm working on saving up a year's emergency fund. So right now I'm really just maxing out my retirement accounts. I do invest a very small bit in Bitcoin and Ethereum. But that's like, it's like not even worth mentioning. It's like less than $1,000 because I just do a dollar cost averaging. I do $50 a week just into it. And I just started that a couple of months ago. But yeah, after this, I do Fidelity for my 401k. I love Fidelity. I think they're a great brokerage. And then I do Vanguard for my IRA. And then I just use Coinbase for crypto.
Okay. Yeah, I use Coinbase as well. So, you know, have you ever dabbled in individual stock picking? Do you do any of that or no? Purely
no, but I do want to. That's one of the things where I would be picking like blue chip stocks. I'm not the type of person who really cares to like speculate, you know? Sure. I was looking at like Andrew and I talk a lot, Fluent in Finance, and you know, there's definitely some ETFs that he puts out there where I'm like, I think I'll put a little bit of money in those because it's like, yes, it's a little bit riskier because they're aggressive, but at the same time, you're not just picking individual stocks, which I think is, you know, risky for some people. But at the same time, I do plan to invest in individual stocks, but it's going to be kind of like the sprinkles on the cake, you know, where it's like, I've got my big index funds. I've got all of the things that like are safe-ish and that are really doing well for me. And then if I want to get a little bit more aggressive, then I'll, you know, purchase those individual stocks that are the icing or the sprinkles on the cake.
I love that. Yeah. Just follow every move Andrew makes, I guess.
There you go.
So I've heard whispers. Are you getting your CFP? Talk to me about that.
Yes, I am. So I am in the process of getting my CFP. My course actually started last week. And I was like, oh crap, I'm going to have to quit my job a whole lot sooner than I thought in order to keep up with this Hello Bear, my full client load, content creating, a YouTube channel. It's just like, I don't know how I could do all of this, but I am, I'm super excited about it. I got a scholarship. So if anybody in the comment section, I know we have a lot of content creators out there, and I know a lot of people consider getting their CFPs. There is a women's initiative, if any of you are women, to get more women CFPs. So I was able to get my my education half off because I'm simply by being a woman who wants to become a CFP. So that was pretty cool. It was kind of one of those things where I was like, man, this is coming half off. I feel like I gotta do it. So yep, I am pursuing that, and I should be able to sit for the test next year.
That's awesome. What made you, what inspired you to get that designation? You know, what did you think about that?
Honestly, it was just because, so there's obviously a lot of liability in talking to people about investing, even if I'm just educating people. A lot of the times people are like, oh, well, can't you just tell me what to invest in? And it's like, no, I really can't. All I can do is I can explain to you the different options, the pros and cons of each, and then you have to make those decisions for yourself. Right. So the reason I decided to become a CFP is kind of not only to protect myself, where it's like, okay, if somebody ever did, you know, want to sue me because they thought I told them to invest in a certain stock over another one, you know, even though I avoid that, I want to make sure that I have at least the credentials to be like, okay, well, I'm a CFP. I'm able to.
Yeah, we'll back up. You know, I'm a CFP. Like,
I'm a CFP. But at the same time, the other end is just like, I just want to continue my education. And it's really nice to have it in this like perfectly packaged CFP. The CFP is just one of those really good credit, like, what a highly regarded credential. So it's like, okay, I'm going to go for this because I, not only do I want obviously the liability protection, but I also really want the knowledge. I want to make sure that I'm providing the best information to my audience, my clients, and whoever else is, you know, dropping into my DMs. So that, you know, I know that I'm giving the best information that I can possibly give. So I'm not sure if I actually want to practice as a CFP. It's more just, I want the, you know, the title.
Yeah, I like that because I don't know. I was thinking about getting it too, just for that additional protection. I might have to be reaching out to you to see that process.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a pretty, do you have like your series or any of your series?
I have my CFA, which counts for what? Series 65, I guess is what they call it.
Yeah.
But nothing else.
I mean, CFA is like, that's like the creme de la creme of credentials. So that's pretty great.
Honestly, it's just one of those things. If you're willing to put on 40 pounds, lose all your significant others, and just focus for 4 years, I did all of those things. It took 4 years, but that's what it takes.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those things, that sacrifice. But I mean, that's pretty impressive. But that's funny. It's so true.
Yeah, it is.
Somebody had a comment in there and I can't remember. Andrew said it's just put for entertainment purposes. And like, I definitely put just for entertainment purposes all the time, but you just never know what somebody's going to, you know, come back and say like, well, she told me this. And it's like, I didn't, but I also record all of my sessions to make sure that, you know, nothing's off the books is happening or nothing that shouldn't happen is happening. You know what I mean?
Right. So talk to me, you know, as you're building a, you know, a diversified portfolio, have you thought about real estate? Are you renting right now or what are you doing currently?
Yeah. So I rent right now. When I went into 2021, I was planning on purchasing a building. And then the market just went completely insane. So it's in my area where I've been looking, it's just been almost nothing all of the time. And with the amount of focus that I've been putting into Clobear and my full-time job, I'm like, I'm not going to worry about this right now. This feels like a full-time job of looking for a deal and making sure, you know, and it's like, I love that. I would love to get into real estate. I think it's such a good way to build wealth, and it's such a quick way to build wealth that when you look at it in the terms of using those homes as leverage to buy another building, love it, think it's great. But my plans have kind of changed just because I do really want to quit my job so that I can do this full time. And so when I quit this, I don't really want to have anything that I'm worried about that in terms of things that I'm responsible for. So I think for now that's kind of being put on the shelf where I'm not going to worry about it. Because my new priority is quitting my job.
Yeah, I totally agree. Cause like, you know, getting into the entrepreneurial world, like yourself, you know, it's all about lowering your expenses because the income is so up and down. And, exactly. You know, for me, fortunately, I house hack it, so it's not, you know, that big a deal.
I'm so jealous. That's what I wanted to do. Oh, that's the
dream. It has its pros and cons, though. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, living with roommates is tough. But, you know, I feel like I did that enough in the military that now I don't want to do it anymore, but... It helps.
Oh, and when I say house hacking, I do not want roommates. I will not do that again. I mean more like own a building and rent out one of the units and live in the other ones. That's what I would do. I did roommates until last year. So I was until I was 28. Now I'm like, all right, I'm good. I don't need to do that anymore.
So any plans of moving out of, you know, are you in Chicago right now?
So I am right outside of Chicago in Oak Park, and I do really like it, but I am definitely looking to move. But again, it just kind of depends on what happens with when I'm able to quit and things like that. I would really like to move somewhere warmer, like Arizona or
Austin.
Yeah, maybe Austin. We'll see. I don't know. Austin's, I don't know if I could live in Texas, but I mean, maybe we'll see how Austin is.
Right. Yeah. You know, so what are your goals this next year with Clover? I'm just kind of curious. What, you know, I want to know what plays do you have, or kind of curious the direction you think you're headed.
Yeah. So like I said, I'm going to quit my job, hopefully. All right. Hopefully nobody who I work with is on this, but that my stretch goal, or I guess, no, it's not my stretch goal. My stretch goal would be, I would like to quit my job this year. So in 2021, that'd be like aggressive, but I'm trying to get to that, that year emergency fund first, which I think I can get by the end of the year. But my safe bet, like, okay, if I don't reach that or whatever, if I can't quit by the end of this year, then I'll quit next summer when I have my CFP. So those are the two major things that I'm like focusing on the most. I am working on a course, so I'm definitely trying to get in on the course making.
The course game?
The course game. Everybody's got a freaking course. But that is slowly but surely, since I'm so heavily working on my CFP right now. But that's definitely something that'll be coming out in the future. And yeah, I think it's just continuing more of what I'm doing. You know, I love what I do. I feel so lucky to be able to teach people how to money. And I feel so lucky that, you know, I get to talk to people about money. And so it's just more of that, really. And, you know, maybe a couple more speaking gigs. I'm very excited about the FinCon panel and talking to folks about money and empathy.
Are they going to stream that so I can, because I won't be able to make it to Texas. I got my sister's wedding. How could she?
Oh, yeah. I know. So rude.
Are they going to stream it live, though? Hopefully.
They are. They're doing it virtual. They're doing a virtual option. Good. So, yes, I believe it's going to be recorded and streamed.
Okay. You know, being that you teach people how to money, you know, what is your first step? What would you tell somebody who's debt-free and just wanting to start investing? What's your first step for them to think about?
Yeah, so I would say 100% make sure you have an emergency fund. I feel like the emergency fund is step one, no matter where you're at, even if you have high interest debt, even if you, you know, in this situation where you're saying they're debt free, like, well, make sure you have that emergency fund. But start with the easy stuff. Start with getting your employer match. And then if you get your employer match, move into using a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA, because at the end of the day, our biggest expenses are always going to be taxes. So no matter what income rate you are. And after that, you know, I would say focus on maxing those out. So I like maxing out my 401k. I know a lot of people don't like 401ks because of the fees, but I think that the ability to have everything automated, automatically coming out of your check so that you never see it.
There's a power to that.
There is a huge amount of power to that. And then not only that, there are a lot of 401ks that I feel like are catching up with the times, and they're not just focused on target date funds. They're not just focused on high fee mutual funds. They're not necessarily all actively managed either. And I think that you can definitely have a good 401k. And the nice thing is, obviously, you can roll it over whenever you leave that job into a lower cost IRA. So that's what I would say is, personally, I think that the 401k is an underrated tool, just because it takes the decision-making power out of things. And when it comes to finances, it really is. And I feel like if you just think about how long it takes people to decide to invest, the amount of time people spend thinking about it, the times that they spend worrying about it. What should I do? How should I do it? And it's like, if you're doing it through your 401k, you've already made that decision. It is already happening. You do not have to think about this every single month, and you don't have to like stretch your willpower, because we only have a finite amount of willpower and decision ability. So to me, I think that's huge. It's literally the epitome of paying yourself first. But again, it depends on what kind of 401k you have. If you have a 401k with target date funds and they're crappy and they have high fees, some target date funds are better than others.
Andrew, did you see what
Target date funds is like when you break up with an ex and people say you could have done better. That's hilarious.
Target date funds.
I do too.
Absolutely hate them.
Yes, I feel like target date funds, if I had to put it in order, so if we're talking about like financial advisor, target date funds, robo-advisor, or managing it yourself, my number one, manage it yourself, but obviously that's not an option for everybody. A lot of people are still learning and they don't want to manage it yet, so I'm totally fine with that and I get that. My second option would be go with a robo-advisor. That's going to be, to me, that's much better than using a target date fund. Target date funds, what I have seen is a lot of times they have high fees. You're paying double fees. You're paying a fee for that target date fund and all of the funds inside of it. And then on top of it, they are often not as aggressive as you need them to be, or they're too conservative. They're too focused on bonds. They're too focused on putting cash in it. And to me, it's like, I don't like the lack of control that's going on there. Somebody just asked, what's a target date fund? So a target date fund is essentially a fund of funds. So if you think of like those nesting dolls, it's like you have that one nesting doll. So that's your target date fund. And that big nesting doll has a fee. It's usually like 0.5%, but sometimes like Vanguard has some decent target date funds that are much lower. It could be all the way up to like 1%. Then inside of that nesting doll, you have all these other little dolls, and each one of those dolls is another fund. So it could be an ETF, it could be an actively managed mutual fund, it could be an index fund, it could be all of these different things, but essentially, your fund, it's like your nesting doll has all of these other dolls inside of them, and each one of those dolls is a fund, and you have to pay a fee for each one of those dolls.
That's a great way to describe it, actually. I've never heard of that. I don't even need to say any more about that. You know, I know Andrew talked about coming on. Do you mind if I bring Andrew on?
Bring him on.
Oh, yes. I don't even need to say anything more about target date funds. That was wonderfully put. Andrew, get on live right now.
What's funny is I just started describing that to my clients that way. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do a post about this, because that's like, I feel like it's like the perfect description, you know, or like a box of chocolates filled with other boxes of chocolates. I'm like, that doesn't make nearly as much sense. Hey, Andrew.
Andrew,
guys, how you doing?
You were asking me to come on. What do you got to say? I love seeing your beautiful face. Let's what you got?
I just might Cole hit it on a nail. A lot of times people buy target dates just because they think they're going to retire that year, and they're not using their money as efficient as possible. Mm-hmm. So all target date funds are similar to VTI plus bonds. So you have your equity, you have your bonds, and as you get older, it reduces the equity and increases the bonds. But everyone's situation is different. Not using a target date return.
Yep.
How much do you want in terms of market? How much do you want in small cap?
Using as a proxy for risk is weird to me. Like, you know, just because you're young doesn't mean, you know, you can go risk on to the moon, because you don't know what their situation is.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I get that.
No, I agree. And I think that that's the thing about target date funds is it's just not as customizable. It's like you get whatever you get and you don't get to choose what funds you want to be invested in. To me, it's like, I would rather go to M1 Finance and create your own target date fund, you know, go make your own pie and pick which ETFs you want to be invested in and do that every single month. And it's the same thing. I do, however, get when it's like people who would not invest otherwise. So to me, if it's like the only way you're going to invest is through a target date fund, fine, do that. I would do that over a financial advisor, because a lot of the times financial advisors are not looking out for your best interest. At least in that scenario, you're taking that person out of the equation and you can decide, okay, I am going to do this target date fund. I am in charge of this. I know exactly what the fees are and it's going to, you know, automatically rebalance for me. I'm okay with that if that's the only way I can get you to invest. Right. So like when we were talking about that like hierarchy, I would say robo-advisor, then target date fund, then financial advisor, unless you have a really good financial advisor. It's just with financial advisors, when you don't know anything and you're going into this conversation with a financial advisor, you are trusting them. You are expecting them to be the end-all be-all with whatever it is with your finances. And so you're going to believe whatever it is that they're going to say, unless you have enough information to you know, question it and to ask questions and to even know what questions you're supposed to ask. So many people aren't even there yet that it's like, I feel like that's a much more vulnerable situation than just going with a robo-advisor or going with, you know, a target date fund. So in those cases, I would, and I'm biased just because I do think that most people can do it themselves. Most people can pick a target date fund. Everybody can use a robo-advisor. And I think a lot of people can do DIY as well. But, you know, I can't tell you how many times I have clients or followers who send me a message and say they're like in their 20s, have no kids, have no responsibilities, and their financial advisor sold them a whole life insurance policy.
Oh, no, no.
Over and over telling them that this is like the best way to invest and it's risk-free. And it's like, you are missing out on so many gains by not doing this yourself. And you are also just paying so much in fees.
I mean, seldom does it ever make sense to introduce another guy into your financial situation, right? It's just another middleman. I don't want it.
Right, right. Well, and that's why I go back to like why I'm not actually planning on practicing as a CFP, because my end goal is to get everybody to do it for themselves. At the end of the day, I do understand some people are not going to want to do it for themselves. So in that case, at least there are some good CFPs out there and good financial advisors out there willing to help and not switch between, because you guys know that I could go on this all day. So excuse me for getting on my
rant. No, go ahead. Just strike them down. Strike them down.
Oh my God. I'm like, here we go. But a lot of people don't know that there is a difference between the suitability standard and a fiduciary standard. And they think all financial advisors have their best interests in mind. And that is just not true. Financial advisors that do not have their CFP are not required to abide by the fiduciary standard. And the fiduciary standard, for those who do not know, is basically a standard that CFPs have to abide by or else they are liable. And they have to keep your best interest in mind when providing you with any kind of product. Because at the end of the day, if it's the wrong product for you, they can be sued because they sold you a product that is not suited for you, that's not in their best interest. Right. Financial advisors, on the other hand, if they do not have their CFP, if they do not practice under the fiduciary standard, they just have to get something that suits you. They don't have to think of your best interest. They can say, oh yeah, I sold her that because it suits her because of XYZ. They don't have to worry about it. I had a guest on my channel who was talking about it. Like, if you were buying a sweater, a CFP would say like, what's your favorite color? What materials do you like? What's your size? What, like, you know, find out all of these different things about you. Whereas a financial advisor can be like, oh, you want that sweater? Here you go. Like, it doesn't matter if it's your size, doesn't matter if it's itchy, doesn't matter if you like it. It's just, here you go. So a lot of people do not realize that there is a difference. And also with the CFP, there's this kind of loophole where CFPs, yes, they're supposed to practice under the fiduciary standard, but there are times where they can switch out of the fiduciary standard and switch into the suitability standard, and they do not always disclose when they're switching. So if your CFP is switching into an insurance salesman, that's a big warning sign that this person is switching between a fiduciary standard and a suitability standard. So ask questions, always ask, are you practicing under a fiduciary standard or a suitability standard at every step of the way, especially when they're selling you products.
Yeah.
So that's my rant.
No, I love that. That's, yeah. What, that's why I'm under a fiduciary at an RIA, which thankfully, you know, and that helps protect me, you know, and yeah, you're totally right about the suitability. Anyone could be suitable for fixed income, for example. I mean, even me, right? If I needed, you know, emphasis on income, someone could say, oh, go get 100% bonds, and that could be suitable. Right. And right. Yeah, I hate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really convoluted. And the thing is, it's not really regulated that well.
Andrew, what are your thoughts, man?
I am indifferent on life insurance if you don't have children. Like the best person that like explained this to me was Billy.
Yeah, Billy.
Yeah, Billy was good. But like Chloe just dropped out because like I didn't know because I'm not super concerned about this kind of stuff. And I'm like,
sure. Right. I think it's especially important for those that still have many working years and human capital left, right? Because the whole point of life insurance is like to replace that income. But I'm kind of curious, what are your thoughts on whole life? You kind of rant. I love the rant because I hate whole life too. What, you know, why do you have such distaste for it?
Why do I, or why does Andrew?
Why do you, Chloe?
The reason I wouldn't have distaste for whole life insurance if it was sold appropriately. Mm-hmm. The thing is, it's not. It's often not sold appropriately. It's not often given to people or sold to people who actually need it. It's sold under this idea that it is this great investment vehicle, when really it's more focused on maintaining your wealth or very special circumstances, because most people do not need life insurance for their whole life. Most people need it for term. They need it until their kids can take care of themselves, or they need it, you know, if it's a special circumstance. Let's say you have a special needs child who you're going to have to care for even when you're gone. Okay, maybe whole life insurance policy makes sense then. But it's a very specific product for a very specific scenario. They're often sold like there, it's this like catch-all policy that apply that works for everybody. And oh, it's also this tax-free growth, and it's like, yeah, but you're missing a lot of the story. And I think, unfortunately, what I have seen in my clients and my followers is that it's often sold to people who do not understand the policy, because a lot of people, they're confusing. They're purposely confusing. And so a lot of people think they're getting this really great investment vehicle that's this risk-free product, which, by the way, anytime you hear risk-free, you're warning bells should be going on. Because if it's investments, unless it's bonds, even bonds have some risk.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a risk-free investment that's also going to make these amazing returns. Like, that's just, it's not a thing. But people who are new to investing don't know that. They don't understand that. And again, they are trusting this financial advisor or insurance salesman.
Yeah.
So that's my problem with it, is the way that it's sold is often not taking into it's done under this like cloak and dagger. It's not supposed to be sold as an investment. It should be sold as an insurance product. And that is the thing, is most of them are being sold as if they're these investment products. And that's what I'm seeing all of the time, time and time again. And the thing is, when you look at the people who, you know that it's not a good product for the people that it's being sold to, because when you look at the stats, the people who get out of it within like the first couple of years, it's something insane. It's like 80 to 90% get out of their whole life insurance policy within a few years of it being open, because the premiums are so expensive and it wasn't a right fit for them. So again, it's the problem of people acting under the suitability standard. It's also the problem of people selling something that they're making huge commissions off of and pretending that it's this investment gold standard when it's not.
As always, guys, thanks for tuning in. Stay hungry, keep grinding, and I'll catch you on the next one. Peace.